Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Colorado Avalanche beat writer for Colorado Hockey Now, podcaster for Mile High Sports. And I come to you Sunday night following the Avs' second consecutive win. And I hate how my schedule played out on Saturday, because following the Vegas win, I woke up the next day and did a podcast. And then when the Avalanche lost to the Columbus Blue Jackets, I got up the following day and talked about another loss. Then the New York Islanders and Patrick Waugh came to town, and I woke up the next day to cover yet another loss. And then two nights later, Colorado lost to the Boston Bruins, and I woke up the next morning and talked about the Avs' fourth straight loss to cover the season, or to start the season. Then, on Friday, the Anaheim Ducks come to town. Colorado goes down 2-0 on two very strange, questionable goals before coming all the way back to take a 3-2 lead, give up the lead, and then win it in overtime, 4-3. And because of my schedule on Saturday, the first win of the season, and I was unable to give it its flowers with its own 20-minute recap. So here we are Sunday night. The Colorado Avalanche just beat the San Jose Sharks. They are now 2-4 on the season and really starting to look like the team that we see, that we are kind of programmed to see, the one that can win in many different ways, the one that can win a high-scoring game, the one that can dominate games, and also the one that can win a tight defensive game, kill off penalties, rely on the goaltender, take an early lead, and hold the lead the rest of the way. So kudos to the Avalanche for doing that. They are finally looking more like themselves. And of course, at 2-4, is it the most ideal record you want? No, but it's also very early in the season and you have plenty of time to get out of this. I remember back when they lost that game to the Boston Bruins, there was a stat that came out, and it was basically that through the first four games, the Avalanche had let in a goal in every single period. And you can include the first period of the Anaheim Ducks game as well. So 13 straight periods, Colorado had let in a goal before the other team failed to score in the second period against the Ducks. And then they let in that late goal in the third. And then they let in another goal in the first against San Jose. But then they had two more periods of closing it out. So the first four games and all of those losses, they had let in a goal in every single period. And I want to focus specifically on those four games. They did not enter the third period. They did not exit any period with a lead. Woof. I kind of stumbled on my words there. So let me say it again. In those first four games, the Avalanche did not have a lead at the end of any period. And in fact, they didn't even have a lead at the end of any period against the Anaheim Ducks either. And in those first four games, Colorado led for a combined 5 minutes. They were playing a lot of catch-up hockey, a lot of it. Or the score was knotted up for a small percentage of the game, but only 5 minutes of those games were they actually leading. And that includes against Vegas, they scored the first goal before giving it up. To open the season, they scored the first goal before giving up one to the Golden Knights very shortly after. It also happened, I believe, against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Just over and over again, this team had shot themselves in the foot during those four games, and it was a brutal and a rough stretch. So it's nice to see them getting away from that a little bit. It's nice to see them having the game they had against Anaheim, where Colorado came out. I mean, it all started against Boston in the third period. They had a strong period, and the last time I did this podcast, I talked about how Colorado should use that third period against the Boston Bruins to really crawl out of this rut, to really build on something, to take that, use it as motivation to say, we've got this figured out. We're not a bad team. We just had a bad 11-period stretch, and that bad 11-period stretch just so happened to be the first 11 periods of the season. And that's something that Jared Bednar has said many times. It's, you know, have we gone through stretches like this? Yes, plenty of times, and he's very open about that. It's just the difference this time is that it's at the beginning of the season, which makes it a little bit of a tougher pill to swallow when you look at the standings and see points for pretty much every team, except for the Nashville Predators. But then you look at the Avalanche and they're 0-4-0 points in four games. So they built off that Boston game. They come out guns blazing in the first period against the Anaheim Ducks. But then on a net mouth scramble where it looked like the puck was lost somewhere in Georgiev's pad, there was no whistle. And then when Georgiev got up, or when Georgiev made a move, the puck trickled out. And then you had Josh Manson trying to cover the puck and push it up against the pad. And Anaheim kept going and playing to the whistle. And they scored on that net mouth scramble. And I remember when that goal went in, it was kind of like in my head, it was more of a 50-50. I'm like, is this worthy of pinning on the officials? Probably not. But at the same time, you know, you could see why there should have been a whistle there, just given the way that the game is usually played. The refs kind of let it go for a little bit longer than they should have. But all was fine. The Avalanche were still playing better. They were facing a tough goalie who was having a great night in Lucas Dostal for the Anaheim Ducks. And they were just pouring it on, shots after shots, high danger opportunities. They out-coursed the ever-living shit out of the Anaheim Ducks along the way. But then late in the first period, the famous or infamous, however you want to refer to it, goal happens where the puck deflects and goes up into the netting behind Georgiev, bounces off the netting and comes back down. And all 10 players on the ice saw it. Both goalies on the ice saw it. All the guys on the Avalanche bench saw it. Everybody saw it except for the official. And then when the puck came down, it kind of landed on Sam Girard's stick. And you saw the official kind of stuck in this weird daze of like he pointed up to the net. He was going to blow his whistle. Then he doesn't. And I loved Jared Bednar kind of breaking that down in his post-gamer because he saw it the same way. And then he was going to blow his whistle again. And Jared said it well. He said the ref obviously didn't see it hit the netting. And he can't guess. He can't blow the whistle just because, you know, guys are pointing up to the net and everybody stops skating. You can't blow the whistle because of that. If you don't see it, you don't see it, and that's that. The problem that Jared Bednar had was that confusion after the puck came down. He pointed up. He was going to blow his whistle. He hesitated. He pointed up, and it kind of caused a little bit of confusion for Samuel Girard, who, you know, you're taught in the NHL to play to the whistle. Cale Makar didn't like how the Avalanche stopped playing, you know, waiting for the whistle that the puck went out of play. Jared Bednar mentioned that he didn't like that his team stopped playing, but he could understand why Sam Girard was kind of in this little bit of a confusion zone, and then he eventually just knocks it off the boards into the neutral zone. San Jose comes in, pass, shot, goal, 2-0. It was the most 2024-25 goal the Avalanche have given up yet. The entire, not just the goal, the entire sequence. It was like the epitome of what this freaking season has been. And it was the turning point and kind of like, okay, freaking enough is enough. Since that period, the Avalanche have outscored the opposition 8-2 since that goal. And it should have been 8-1, honestly, or 7-1, because they wouldn't have needed an OT goal. But they shouldn't have let in that late goal to Anaheim either. But the Ducks were pressing. They were coming off two power plays. And, you know, they worked hard for that goal. But the puck comes down, Girard gets confused, knocks it into the neutral zone, Anaheim comes in, pass, shot, goal, 2-0. You go into the intermission, and for the first time all season, I know it's the Anaheim Ducks. This isn't Vegas or Boston or Patrick Waugh and the Islanders, you know, three playoff teams. This isn't Columbus coming in playing bad goaltending. This is the Anaheim Ducks. They're not expected to make the playoffs. They're a good young team, but they're not by any means, again, Vegas or Boston. So, you know, it's not the same kind of competition. You're not as worried about a 2-0 hole against them as you would against a stronger team. But at the same time, you went into that intermission kind of like, the Avs got this. There is no way this game is going to get away from them. And they come out in the second period and just obliterate the Anaheim Ducks with shots. I believe it was 17-3 at the end of the period. And they're getting chance after chance. Kovalenko springs Casey Mittelstadt in on a breakaway. Mittelstadt scores, and it's 2-1. And the Avalanche are pressing and pressing and pressing, and they can't beat Lucas Dostal for a second goal. But it was an incredible game. It was an incredible performance. And then, of course, again, going into the third period, it felt the exact same way. Like, you can't possibly lose this game. They outshot the Ducks 18-8 in the first period. They outshot them 17-3 in the second period. And then the third period begins. Colorado gets a power play. When that third period began, Ross Colton had 2 goals. I'm speaking to you now a little over 48 hours later. Ross Colton's got 6 goals. And it all started in that third period. Colorado takes a power play into the third. And just 35 seconds in, Rantanen to Mittelstadt to Colton for the power play goal makes it 2-2. The Avalanche had, you know, they had scored 57 seconds into the second period, the Mittelstadt goal, and then all the way up until 35 seconds into the third period. Dostal basically stood on his head for a complete 20 minutes. It was an incredible performance. So it's 2-2. The game continues at even strength, you know, new winger Ross Colton, who I keep writing about, just this new weapon the Avalanche have on the wing. Colton gets a pass from Rantanen, and it was also set up by McKinnon as a secondary assist. Scores his fourth goal of the game, second goal of the game, fourth of the season. Gives the Avalanche a 3-2 lead with just over 8 minutes remaining. And that's when it looked like, okay, this game's over. Anaheim's got nothing left in the tank. Colorado's dominating. They got the 3-2 lead. They erased the two-goal deficit. Game over. Well, that wasn't exactly the way it played out. As the period went on, the Avalanche to that point, 8 minutes left in the third period, had only one penalty, and it was a Nathan McKinnon tripping penalty that was quickly followed up by a holding by Owen Zellweger and a too many men on the ice by the Anaheim Ducks late in the second, which is what set up the 4-on-3 power play early in the third period that the Avalanche scored on. So they basically only had to kill, 23 seconds of penalty killing time through the entire, you know, first 52 minutes of the game. But then at 14:36, Miles Wood gets called for slashing. Anaheim starts to kind of drive the net, starts to create some opportunities. They're looking for the tying goal. 6-on-4 attack up against the Avs. They push and push and push, and Alexander Georgiev actually made quite a few really strong saves. The penalty expired. It's now a 6-on-5 attack before Troy Terry gets the puck with 13 seconds left from the circle and fires it over the shoulder of Alexander Georgiev. Tie game with 12.9 seconds remaining. And once again, are you freaking kidding me with this Avalanche season? Game goes to overtime. Colorado secures their first point. Mikko Rantanen gets stopped on a wraparound, literally kicked out by Dostal's skate, like the blade of his skate at the last second, just as the puck was on the line. I believe it was Sam Girard that had a breakaway, hits the post, and you're just sitting there like, what does this team have to do to win? And of course, it's Nathan McKinnon going 1-on-3 on the Anaheim Ducks and going all the way up the ice, scoring for the Avs' first win. I remember when we were walking to the dressing room after the game, we passed by the lounge where the family hangs out, and a bunch of family members came out, and I heard one lady say to another something along the lines of, good grief, I thought this team was never going to win a game the way that game was going and the way it ended. And I was going to say, if they lost, like, what does this team have to do to win? And it felt like all of us felt the same way. The media, the fans, the players, the coach. But it was a big weight lifted off their shoulders. They got that victory. They get on the road. They come to San Jose. Eustace Annenen gets the start. Finally, you've had a couple of strong performances, or okay performances, I should say, not terrible performances from Alexander Georgiev. And you can finally turn to Eustace Annenen. He goes up against the San Jose Sharks, who also were playing their backup, Vitek Vanacek. And Colorado comes out in the first period, and it looked like it was going to be a repeat of the Anaheim game. They dominated early. They dominated often. Ross Colton, who had 2 goals in the third period, scores pretty early in the first period, 1-0 for the Avs. And then I believe it was the first goal was at 6:23. And then just over 10 minutes later at 16:37, Cale Makar to Mikko Rantanen to Ross Colton, second of the game, just like last game, scores 1 on the power play, 1-5-on-5. The Avalanche have a 2-0 lead. They're out shooting the San Jose Sharks 12-5. Everything's good and gravy. But then they take a late penalty and the Sharks score. Colorado's power play is struggling. Then they come out in the second period and they start to take penalty after penalty, but they got something they hadn't had in the first 5 games, and it was steady goaltending that made the freaking saves that they needed to make, and it was Eustace Annenen this time. And they go into the third, still up 2-1. Kiviranta scores to make it 3-1. Cale Makar adds the empty netter. Game over. All of that recap of both games was because I wanted to go back to the very first thing I said. The statistic after the first 4 games. Colorado led for 5 minutes out of 240 minutes of hockey. 4 hours of hockey. They had a lead for 5 minutes. This team is known for its comeback wins. It's known for erasing deficits, whether one goal, two goal, or even three goals, which they did several times last year. But they're also known for being one of the better teams at getting a lead and hanging on to it. In the games where the other team gets the lead, Colorado is always in the game. In the games where they get the lead, and especially early, they do a pretty good job of holding on to it. You know, outside of the, you know, blunders here and there, the collapses here and there, they do a good job of holding on to leads. They led for 5 minutes in the first four games. I want to go back to what I just said about the San Jose Sharks game. Ross Colton scored at 6:23 of the first period, and Colorado did not relinquish the lead the rest of the way. They played more than 53 minutes of hockey where the other team was chasing them. I know it's the San Jose Sharks, the team that finished last place last year, the team that still hasn't won a game this year. But that's the type of hockey you want to see from the Avs. Even with this thin lineup, you know that they're up for it, and you know that that's something that they can do. I do want to shout out Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, and Mikko Rantanen. They're three of the six guys in the NHL right now with more than 10 points. And I think it's awesome that they continue to do what they do, even with us sometimes looking and saying they're not playing their greatest. They're doing everything they can with the guys they're missing. Of course, it's been tough for the Avs to not only be missing the talent they're missing, but to be missing crucial defensive pieces in Devon Taves, and even at forward, Arturi Lehkonen and Valeri Nichushkin. Of course, Gabriel Landeskog too, but he's been out for, you know, God knows how long at this point. But the good part about this is, you know, they lead for 53 minutes, and they're going into a stretch now where they're going to play a lot of winnable games. You got the Seattle Kraken, and this is no disrespect to these teams, because a lot of these teams are playing really, really well, which includes the Seattle Kraken and Utah Hockey Club. Utah's 4-1-1. Seattle is 4-2. But the Avalanche are the Avalanche. They go into Seattle on Tuesday. They go into Utah on Thursday. Then they have a back-to-back, a rare home and then again home back-to-back. They got Tuesday Seattle, Thursday Utah, and then they host the Ottawa Senators on Sunday, and they host the Chicago Blackhawks on Monday. Ottawa and Chicago, two very winnable games. Next week, Wednesday, or the week after that, Wednesday, October 30th, they take on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Then they have the winless Nashville Predators. The Seattle Kraken again before Thursday, November 7th, they take on a tough team in the Winnipeg Jets. Then they got the Carolina Hurricanes, Nashville Predators again. So a lot of winnable games coming up. You're not entering a rough stretch. You know, you're not facing Boston and Vegas and then Toronto and then Tampa. You're facing, you know, a Seattle here, a Utah there, two teams that are playing well. You have a couple games against Nashville, which is still not found their stride, which is good that you're playing them this early in the year, because when that team eventually does find its stride, which I'm assuming will happen, they're going to be a much tougher competition than they've been right, you know, in recent weeks in the first five games. You know, they're still trying to find that chemistry for guys like Stamkos, Marchessault, and Brady Shea. So it's a lot of winnable games coming up, and it's at a time where the Avalanche are missing a lot of guys, and it kind of plays out well for them. But if they continue to do what they've done the last seven periods of hockey, what they did in the third period against the Boston Bruins, what they did against the Anaheim Ducks and the San Jose Sharks. Again, I know these are not tough opponents you're facing in terms of Anaheim and San Jose, but that's the type of hockey you want to play. You can build off of that and take it to a 4-win Seattle team and take it to a 4-win Utah team and build from there. I do want to shout out a couple of other guys. I do want to mention John Ludvig. I think one of my favorite things from this offseason, you know, we always talk about training camp storylines. That's always like one of the things that are, you know, we always joke about it among the media. I don't know how much we talk about it publicly. You know, we may have tweeted it out every once in a while. But one of my favorite things we do as media during training camp, it's like, you know, it's September 27th. What crazy storyline are we all going to follow that won't matter on October 27th? And sometimes it could be as simple as like Pierre-Edouard Belmar on a PTO, or like last year, Ivan, who came in for his first training camp and impressed, or what was the other example that I was thinking of? You know, Jeremy Hansel, who had just been drafted, and look how good he looks, this overage defenseman that the Avalanche drafted, and then he goes to the AHL, and then a few months later he's traded in the deal that brought Yakov Trenin here, and it didn't matter. That's kind of my favorite thing about those training camp stories. But one of my favorite training camp stories, it's not the same, it's not quite the same level this year because these are NHL players, not AHL guys that were, or drafted players that were coming in and trying to impress. But one of my favorite offseason stories this year was Calvin DeHaan, Erik Brännström, Oliver Shillington. You got the older veteran who's going to come in and give you a veteran presence. You got two guys that are low risk, high reward. You could really strike gold. Erik Brännström, not a fit in Ottawa. Could he be a fit in Denver? Oliver Shillington had that weird breakup with the Calgary Flames after missing a full season with mental health and in the NHL Player Assistance Program, I believe he was. Took some time off from the game. Comes back. Calgary tries to lowball him. He rejects that contract, signs with the Avalanche for 1 year at probably less than what Calgary was giving him. Also, low risk, high reward. This guy once played with Chris Tanev, and he was incredible on a Calgary Flames team that was first in the Western Conference a couple years ago, or at least first in their division, I should say. So you're looking at that and you're having the conversation from July all the way to August when they signed Shillington, all the way through training camp. Brännström, DeHaan, and Shillington. Who's playing with Sam Molinsky? Brännström, DeHaan, or Shillington? Who's the number six defenseman? Brännström, DeHaan, or Shillington? What if it's October 20th and it's none of them? What if it's October 20th? You've already traded one of the guys in a cap-clearing move for a draft pick in Erik Brännström. You've tried the Oliver Shillington thing after sitting him a few games, then playing him a few games, and playing him with Cale Makar after the Devon Taves injury. And that was an epic fail. He did not look good. And then you got Calvin DeHaan, who was healthy scratched once, I believe, and hasn't looked great, in my opinion, at least. What if it's John Ludvig? What if that's the guy that I want to, give some credit to today? What if John Ludvig, who was picked up off waivers from the Pittsburgh Penguins, has looked really great with Josh Manson filling in a top four role because of the injury to Devon Taves, because Shillington didn't work, because Girard had to move up and play with Kale? Josh Manson and Ludvig look pretty damn good together. And what if when Devon Taves comes back, if the other guys are still healthy, Calvin DeHaan should be the healthy scratch? John Ludvig should be the guy playing with Sam Molinsky. And once again, it's another one of those scenarios that I mentioned. On September 20th, we're all debating Calvin DeHaan, Erik Brännström, Oliver Shillington. On October 20th, it almost seems like none of them matter. One of them we for sure know doesn't because he's not even here. The other one in Oliver Shillington is going to need to really play well the next time he gets a chance, if he gets another chance, because he did not look good. And then, of course, Calvin DeHaan, who steady might not be the word, but he's been better than the other, option in Shillington. But Ludvig looks better than him, the waiver wire pickup. So shout out to John Ludvig for that. I do want to shout out Justus Annan, and I've been very harsh about his game. In those two relief appearances, especially the Columbus one, I still do believe that the reason why it took so long for him to get a game in as a starter is because of how poor he played against Columbus when it was 3-3 coming in, or sorry, when it was 3-1 when he came in and the Avs tied at 3-3 before he even faced a shot, and then he still let the game slip away. I truly believe that Bednar kind of, quote unquote, punished him for that, but I do want to shout him out for playing his part in the stat that I mentioned earlier. The Avalanche take a 2-0 lead, then they give up a late power play goal. Then in the second period, it was the march to the penalty box. There was about a 30-minute stretch right after the first period where Colorado was outshot 16-6, and Annan stopped every single shot, did not let San Jose get back in the game, which allowed for the stat to even be a thing that I mentioned earlier. Colorado scored at the 6-minute mark of the first period, 6:53, I think it was, and did not relinquish the lead the rest of the way. Annan, leading 2-1 for more than half that game, did not let the San Jose Sharks tie it up at 2-2. So shout out to him for that kind of a performance. He's got Kaapo Kähkönen, who's breathing down his neck now that he's joined the team for practice, and he's on the road trip with the Avs, and they're carrying three goalies. So Justus knows he's got to play well because Colorado would not be afraid to go to Kähkönen if Annan is also struggling. So shout out to him for that. But with that, I'm going to put an end to the podcast here. Colorado's 2-4. on Tuesday. Like I said, they have the Seattle Kraken. Thursday, Utah Hockey Club. I'll try to get some shows out after those games. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.